We continue our study in Ecclesiastes, a biblical philosophy of life, this wonderful letter that has as a theme, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And as we've reviewed many, many times, I hope this picture is clear in your mind and your memory. What does that mean? It's a breath, it's a vapor. It's just here and it's gone, and that's reality. Life is brief, frequently hard to understand and frustrating. And we see that, but this book is not a book of despair. It's a book of hope. It's a book of joy. It's a book that tells us how we live in this life that's a vapor. Now, I'm not going to review where we've been because I've done that repeatedly and all the messages are online, but we've transitioned into Ecclesiastes chapter 5, and there's a series of warnings. It's like a sign that would say, caution, wet floor, right? There's water here, and people sometimes slip, and we don't want you to get hurt, and life is that way. And so we have, beginning in chapter 5, a series of warnings. We've already looked at two of them in chapter 5, verses 1 through 7, that have to do with worship. And again, I won't review that either. But we transition into chapter 5, verses 8 through 20, and Solomon wants us to be warned about finances, about money. We've had one message already from verses 8 through 12. We called it, don't be fooled by money. We noted verses 8 through 9 that others will always have more. Verse 10, no matter how much you have, you'll never be content because money doesn't buy contentment. Verse 11, it will complicate your life. Verse 12, it may cost you sleep. And yet Solomon's not finished talking about money. So in verses 13 through 20, we'll look at tonight. I've called it, sometimes I struggle with titles, but I've just called this money reality and remedy. And as you can guess, it's a two-point message. We're first of all going to consider a reality, and then we'll see the remedy. What's the reality? Our first point tonight, Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 13 through 17. The reality is you can't take it with you. And Solomon's going to help us understand that and think about that, even as he tells us the story of something he observed. So we're going to begin reading chapter 5, verses 13 through 17. And Solomon says, there's a grievous evil which I have seen under the sun. So he calls this a grievous evil. The Holman Christian Standard Bible calls it a sickening tragedy. So the first thing we're going to see in verse 13 is there's a tragedy. We're going to read about a man who's hoarding his riches. See, verse 13 says there's a grievous evil, a tragedy, which I have seen under the sun. So it's something Solomon's noticed. It's under the sun. That just means it's in this world. It's part of our life. Riches being hoarded by their owner to his hurt. Now, the word hoarded, and you would see this if you have a New American Standard Bible, a footnote there, literally means guarded. So here's a gentleman who has a wealthy man, and he has riches, and he's guarding these riches. He's afraid he's going to lose these riches. That's why they translate it as hoarding. He's not spending his money, enjoying it, and giving thanks. He's not giving away his money and giving his thanks. It's the idea that this money is what makes me happy, so I'm going to like put a fence around it and hang on to it. And Solomon says, I've seen that. It's a grievous evil, which I have seen under the sun, verse 13, riches being hoarded by their owner to his hurt. And then what happens? We go to verse 14, and we see there's a misfortune. When those riches were lost through a bad investment, and he fathered a son, then there was nothing to support him. That is to support the son. So the riches were lost through a, in my Bible, we have here a bad investment. ESV says a bad venture. NIV just says some misfortune, literally an evil task, maybe a bad investment. You know, maybe something that he couldn't control, maybe in the market, maybe in nature, we don't know. But something happened, and it's gone. And now he has a need because he just had a baby. He fathered, you see it in verse 14? He fathered a son, and there was nothing left to support him. Because this man who was hoarding all of his money, thinking it would bring him satisfaction, he lost it. And now he can't even take care of his child. And that happened, and Solomon saw that. And you might ask, Greg, does that happen today? I mean, we're pretty sophisticated today, right? I mean, we have different ways to invest, and we know how to hedge our investments, and we know how to, you know, invest in things and that are multifaceted and hopefully safe. And I was dwelling on this. Does this still happen today? Sometimes it does, right? I think about a gentleman who made his riches in this. He was the richest man in his country, Ireland, for many years. He started in gravel. And then what began selling gravel then became a business empire. Then he became a key guy in construction, and then real estate, and then insurance. His name is Sean Quinn. And in 2008, he was worth $6 billion. More recently in history, he lost it all. He lost more than it all. He went bankrupt, completely lost everything he had, and he ended up in debt over $3 billion. You say, what happened? He lost everything. Just like this man. Now you say, was he hoarding his riches? I don't know the man. Just an illustration of things went bad in his country. There was a financial crisis. And all of a sudden, he lost more than he had. Much more. Now, does that happen to everyone? No. But maybe yes. Not in this world, necessarily. But Solomon is going to draw a principle from this, okay? So we see a tragedy, a man hoarding riches, misfortune, riches lost. Let's look at Solomon's principle. It's in verse 15. Guys, you can't keep it. Even if there's no reversal in your life and everything goes your way, even if you're good with money and God just blesses you, no matter how well you do, you can't keep it. That's verse 15. As he'd come naked from his mother's womb, so will he return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. We're born with empty hands, and we die with empty hands. No matter how much you get in this life, you can't take anything out of this world with you, no matter how hard you try, no matter how much you want to. You simply can't. That's the principle. So even if through this life you get a lot and you hold it, you could only hold it for this life. And this life is a vapor. And that's a principle that Solomon wants us to understand. Now he's going to help us with an application. So we have the tragedy in verse 13 of hoarding riches, the misfortune of the riches lost, verse 14. The principle, you can't keep it, or maybe we've heard it this way, you can't take it with you. Now we're going to make the application in verses 16 through 17. Why work for the wind? And I think you'll see why I would word it that way. Verse 16. This also is a grievous evil. And here's Solomon repeating what he said in verse 13. Exactly as a man is born, thus will he die. Exactly as a man is born. In the Hebrew, it's a very specific phrase. Quite exactly as. You entered this world with empty hands, and that is exactly the way you're going to leave this world. With empty hands. So what is the advantage? Verse 16 continues. To him who toils for the wind. Because in a sense, working for money is like working for the wind, meaning you're trying to grab the wind. We all have seen, in a sense, the effect of the wind. Pictures of trees blowing in the wind. We know the wind is powerful. We know the wind is strong. And we observe it, at least the results of it. We know it's there. And yet, no matter how hard you try to grasp the wind, you can't. It just goes right through your fingers. And no matter how hard we try to find satisfaction in this life through money, it goes through your fingers. And it's a very, very difficult thing. The Bible says something even more. Not only is it true that you can't hang on to it and you say, well, I have to leave everything. Sometimes trying to grasp the wind actually hurts you. in this life. It's much worse than, no, you just, well, life was awesome, but you can't take it with you. Okay, no. Some people, life is not awesome because they spend their lives trying to grasp the wind. That's the application Solomon's reading here or writing for us. Let's go one more verse. Throughout his life, I'm in verse 17, he also eats in darkness with great vexation, sickness, and anger. Throughout his life, he eats. Eats, maybe not a reference to actual eating. It may be that, but it's just what we spend a lot of our time doing. So it's just another way of saying, this is how the guy lives. He wanted to hang on to his money so tightly that his life was what? Darkness, great vexation, sickness. It was a physical strain, and anger. I mean, what a way to live. The NIV maybe will help us think more about it. Ecclesiastes 5:17, excuse me, the NLT, New Living Translation. Throughout their lives, they live under a cloud, frustrated, discouraged, and angry. Our world is filled with people like this. You know that. They make incredibly large amounts of money. And they're so convinced that if they just make a certain amount of money, it'll bring them happiness. And so they focus on that money. They work very long hours. And many of them are very successful people. And they're always stressed. They're never really relaxed. They're really not even enjoying what they have. Because they're so focused on getting more money, convinced that'll make them happy. And it's sad. It's unfortunate. I came across an illustration of this just reading through a book related to Ecclesiastes 5. It's like a guy who spends his life thinking, if I just made enough money, I could buy a house maybe with an outdoor kitchen like this. And if you have an outdoor kitchen like this, no worries. But a guy who's so focused on it, that he wants it so badly. He's not home with his family much. He's not enjoying life much. He's not living in fellowship with God much. He's just a driven guy. He's successful. Everybody looks up to him. And when it's time to have a cookout, it's going to be steak. Expensive cuts of meat. But the whole time he won't enjoy it. In fact, the whole time he'll be answering emails from all of his accounts, whether national or international. Because that's what you have to do when you have that level of income. And he's so convinced that this would make him happy, when in reality he would have been so much better if he would have just stepped back and realized money will never make you happy. And maybe just having a simple grill with a little bit of charcoal and a couple hamburgers, and actually having the time to not answer emails, to just leave the work at the office or at the shop, and just spend some time with the simple things that God has given you, and say, thank you, Lord, and enjoying them. But see, this guy here, he doesn't do that. He doesn't act that way. So here's a guy who is struggling. He hoards his riches, then he loses them because he doesn't understand you can't keep it. He never really got the sense of, why am I working all the time? It's like grasping the wind. Now, some people will say, well, Greg, I still want to make a lot, and even if it doesn't make me happy, I want to leave an inheritance for my family, because if I can leave a lot of money to my family, those who come after me, then that would really help them. I'm just in looking up different things and thinking about this text and money and such, there was a book that came out recently. It's by a gentleman named Michael Cole. It's called More Than Money, published in 2017. He does financial investing only for wealthy people. I would not qualify to have him work with me, okay? To have him invest for you, you have to be worth $75 million minimum. Okay, I think that's a little bit beyond most of us, honey, right? I think that's a little, she said. Okay, all right. But he did a study. And here's the interesting thing. 7 out of 10 of his clients So that means worth $75 million or more. 7 out of 10 wealthy families lose their fortune by the second generation. 70% of the families that have a person who leaves an incredible inheritance, by the second generation, it's gone. 70%, 90% by the third generation. Doesn't last. It's simply, even if you're thinking, but I would want to make this, and I realize that's probably more than most of us could make. But even if you're thinking, I just want to leave money for those who come behind me, it doesn't last. The Bible's teaching us you can't take it with you. That's the reality. And Solomon doesn't leave us there. I thought it'd be good for us to consider, how do we respond to this? Just 2 points tonight. We've already had one. The reality, you can't take it with you. The remedy. The remedy, again, if you've been here listening to Ecclesiastes, then this should be no surprise. If you're not used to Ecclesiastes, this may be a surprise. Because if I said to you, what do you think the biblical remedy is, you probably would think, I know, live a simple life, live in moderation, just squeak by with little things and trust Jesus, which is great advice. It's not Solomon's advice. Solomon's advice is learn to enjoy life. And that's something money can't buy for you. You say, what are you talking about? Okay, 3 verses, 3 points. First of all, accept your lot. That's verse 18. It is good that you grasp one thing and also not let go of the other. For the one who fears God comes forth with both of them. That doesn't sound familiar at all. And I skipped a page. All right. I'm having iPad troubles tonight, and someone graciously let me use a paper Bible. I'm not used to turning pages, okay? Okay, but I think I'm good. Thank you, honey. Is it good now? Okay. All right, I'll just stay with this. Thank you. Okay. It's nice about scrolling, you know? It's easier. Here we go. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 18. This looks familiar. Here is what I seem to be good and fitting: to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him. For this is his reward. My translation, NASB, end of verse 18. This is his reward. I believe both the ESV and the NIV say this is your lot. This is what you've been given. Life is brief. It's a vapor. We're here. We're gone. God has given you a lot. It never even dawned on me, so I just said that. I didn't mean it that way. God has given you your lot, is how I meant to say that. Your lot may be a lot. Your lot may be kind of moderate. Your lot may be less. But God has given us all a place where we serve him. He's given us a task. He's given us something to do. And for some people, that will be a lot of money. For some people, more moderate. For some, less. But what Solomon is teaching us here in verse 18 is accept your lot. Again, notice what the Bible says here. That God has given him, what? These days, the years of his life in which you toil under the sun. This is your reward. So what should you do? Eat, drink, and enjoy yourself as you go through this world. I've had students many times. I teach university setting. Students often, hey, I'm struggling about maybe changing my major. You know, mom and dad, they kind of think I should be majoring in something that makes money. That's very common. I've heard that so many times. Mom and dad want to make sure I major in something that makes money. I don't completely dismiss that, but just based on what we're learning in Ecclesiastes, I already know money won't make you happy. That doesn't mean money's irrelevant. And then sometimes the students say, I just want to major in something I like doing. Hey, Dr. Mazak, help me out. What do you think? And, you know, that's obviously a complicated question, and there's many things to consider, but I just encourage my students, one thing I know, life is too short to do something you don't enjoy. Maybe your mom and dad will disagree, and if they disagree with me, God bless them. I would never go through this life doing something I don't enjoy. If doing what I enjoy, and let me tell you what I mean by enjoyment. You say, well, if that's true, Greg, you would try to just find somebody to pay you to ride motorcycles and watch college football. That's not what I mean. I mean something fulfilling, something that you find satisfaction in, something that you really have a sense of, yeah, this is how the Lord made me. This is how he wired me. And if the income is small, who cares? Because you're thinking, this is really how God has made me. And I want to accept where God has placed me. And there's many other people who maybe live in whatever, maybe in nicer houses on my street, or they live on nicer streets or nicer subdivisions or have nicer clothes, or they travel to places I would never travel, whatever the case might be. And I'm glad for them, and God bless them. But I'm thankful for what God has given me. Verse 18, accept your lot. And then verse 19, receive God's gift. Notice verse 19, please. Furthermore, as for every man to whom God has given, notice, riches and wealth, he's also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. Now, when I read that in my New American Standard, it seems like maybe he's saying God has given everyone riches and wealth. In reality, he hasn't. So I thought it would be good for me to put up the NIV here, and maybe this will help us with Ecclesiastes 5:19. It'll be very close for many of you to your ESV. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, notice, everyone doesn't get it. Everyone does not get wealth and possessions. We know that. And everyone doesn't have the ability to enjoy them. Because we all know financially secure people, they're not joyful. You don't want to be like them. You maybe want their bank account, but you don't want to be like them. You know that. Because some people don't have wealth. Some people have wealth and possessions, but other people have it all. They have the wealth, and notice the verse 5:19 Ecclesiastes, they have the ability to enjoy it, to accept their lot, and be happy in their toil, in their work. You say, Greg, how'd they get that? Just the end of the verse. This is a gift from God. I said this a number of times in the earlier sections of Ecclesiastes. Haven't said it recently, but I hope you already know what I'm going to say. You can be hungry and be blessed with a can of peaches, but the can of peaches is not a blessing unless you have a second gift, and that gift is a can opener. You can have great money and buy anything you want, but if you don't have the gift to enjoy it, who cares? Because you don't enjoy it. Because the enjoyment is actually a gift from God. That's what Solomon is saying here. Notice what happens. The person here, verse 19, who has that gift, the gift to enjoy it, what can he do? A, he accepts his lot. B, he receives God's gift. One more verse, verse 20. He's the one that enjoys life. Verse 20, he will not often consider the years of his life because God keeps him occupied with the gladness of his heart. Our world is filled with people that have unhealthy, unwise preoccupations with all kinds of things. And one thing I know is you just look in their eyes, they're not happy. This guy's happy. Verse 20, this is a man, he doesn't consider the years of his life. He doesn't sit around and saying, boy, it's going by so quickly. Why? Boy, there's so many things I don't understand. Why? Lord, why this? Why that? Lord, why all of that? And other people are looking at him and saying, you know, God's been good to you and you have a lot. Well, what? Why this? Why that? He doesn't have the gift. That only comes from God. The gift not of things, even though things are a gift. The gift to enjoy the things that God has given. Most people believe if you have money, you have happiness. Ecclesiastes is teaching us that is not the case. If you have money, you can afford things, but that doesn't mean you have the gift to enjoy the things. I came across a quote from Kaiser. I really appreciate his short book on this book of Ecclesiastes. I read it here. Men must get enjoyment, not possessions. And that capacity to enjoy, no matter how great or how small, it's a gift from God. It is much better to receive wealth as a gift from God along with the God-given ability to enjoy it than to see wealth as an end in itself. Money does not have the ability to make us happy. You can buy everything you want, and even if they're all good things, they're gifts. But if you don't have the gift to enjoy it, then you will find no joy within it. That's what we see here in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 13 through 20, conclusions tonight. Number one, keeping it in the big theme, the context, life is a vapor. It is too short to live for things. You know, hey, Dr. Mazak, if I majored in this, I'd make a ton of money. I could retire by this age. I could have some. And your life's gone. Don't live for things. Things aren't bad, but don't live for things. Your life is a vapor. Number two, the things you get, you leave behind. We all came into this world how? Empty-handed. And we're all going to leave the same way. There's nothing we can take with us. The things you get, you will leave behind. Number three, the ability to enjoy what you get is a gift. If you think there are things in this world that can make you happy, you are wrong. Because they'll never bring you happiness unless God gives you the gift to enjoy them. If it helps to keep it simple, the can of peaches is not helpful until you have the can opener. You need them both. You say, okay, how do I get the ability to enjoy the gift? This is where Ecclesiastes keeps driving us. Our fourth and final conclusion. The gift of enjoyment is given to those who worship the giver. You have to worship the giver to enjoy the gifts that he gives you. If I'm worshiping the gifts, I'll never find satisfaction because they don't have the ability to give me satisfaction. But if I'm worshiping Jesus Christ, and as I live for him, he blesses me financially. He blesses you financially. And as you're worshiping him, you're not hoarding what he gives you. You're spending some, enjoying it. You're giving some, enjoying it, by the way. Because I already know if you do give, you know what it means to enjoy it. Because it's a very enjoyable thing, as it is to also spend some on yourself and enjoy that as well. And God gives people who worship him the gift of enjoying it because you enjoy it as a gift from God. And you're not worshiping the thing itself. You say, okay, so life is a vapor, too short to live for things. Two, the things you leave behind. Three, the ability to enjoy what you get is a gift. And four, the gift of enjoyment is given to those who worship the giver. Where do you specifically see that? In the conclusion of this wonderful book, and we're finished, with Ecclesiastes 12, verses 13 through 14. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. God is pushing us through this book to the place where we would fear, and I'm using that as synonymous with worship, that we would worship him. And that doesn't mean that if you're blessed financially, that you would feel guilty at all. If you have the money to live in a house with a beautiful outdoor kitchen and there's wonderful cuts of steak on it, praise God the whole time, but don't live for it. And if you're worshiping Christ, you'll enjoy it. But if your lot would be such that you would have a small charcoal grill and grill a few hamburgers, and as hard as this is for me to say, even hot dogs, okay? And God would give you the grace to enjoy them if you had to eat them, okay? Then you'll still be glad. Because the key is not the gift. It's enjoying the gift that God gives you. And I know we struggle with this so much, right? Because most of us don't have great means, even though I think we all have much more than we deserve. And we think that some of these people that have so much obviously must be happier than us. And we could spend all day, we could spend all week, we could spend the rest of this year giving examples that that's simply not the case. You can have so many nice things, and if you don't worship Christ, you don't have the gift of enjoying the things. I close with a simple illustration, a sad story of a gentleman. I don't know him, except I looked him up. His name is Adolf Merkel. He's a very famous German businessman. I don't live in that world. In 2008, his net worth was $9.2 billion. I mean, how do you even think of such a sum? And he was very shrewd, he was very smart, and he was convinced that he should put a large amount of money into Volkswagen because the stock was going to climb and he was going to make even more money. And for whatever reason, the stock declined. And he lost a great percentage of his fortune. Not all of it, but it caused him anxiety. And it bothered him. And he tried to rebound and he struggled and he took his own life. You say, why would he take his own life? Was he like the first guy that lost it? He didn't even lose everything. And I know he didn't lose everything because his son followed him, restructured the business, sold a few assets, paid down debt, and his son in the same company is now worth $5.1 billion. So yeah, he did lose, you know, half of his wealth, okay, $4 billion, okay. But the estate or the assets or whatever you would say, they're still in the five range. He still had things. He still had money. But he didn't have the gift of enjoying them. You say, why? I'm going to guess now. I don't know the gentleman. I sure hope he knew Christ. But I'll simply say perhaps. He never knew Christ. He never knew the giver of the gifts. And even if you are worth $9.2 billion, I mean, what good would $9.2 billion, if I could simplify, cans of peaches be if you're really hungry but you don't have a can opener? That's like trying to enjoy the gifts that you have apart from the gift of enjoyment, which only is given to those who know Christ. Do you know Christ? Do you know Christ? If you are worshiping Christ, then you even leave tonight. And you might be in a very nice automobile, and I'm glad for you. You might be in a very basic automobile. And you're fine either way because you're worshiping Christ, which means you're enjoying what God has given you. And you're heading for home. And home might be you're renting a room as you go through college and it's hard. And home might be pretty awesome. A nicer place than many others would live in. It doesn't matter because if you're worshiping Christ, you have the gift of enjoyment. And I'm going to broaden it out even beyond finances, guys. This is true of life. No matter what's happening in your home, your marriage, I'm broadening it out, I realize. I believe the principle is true. No matter what's going on with your kids or your parents, your siblings, your relatives, what's going on with your coworkers or your neighbors, no matter what's going on, if you worship Christ, He gives you the gift of enjoying this life. It doesn't mean it doesn't get hard. It does mean as you go through this life, you come to the conclusion of, I'm just going to fear God and keep His commandments, knowing that I'm accountable to Him during this brief, vapor of time we call life. And if you do that, you will enjoy your life. I've quoted it before. A brother here has reminded me of it. One way of describing the message of Ecclesiastes is have a blast while you last. You don't last very long. But the things many people are striving for are not able to bring them what they really want. To enjoy the things you get for this brief period of time, you need the gift of enjoyment that is only given to those who worship the giver of all good gifts, Jesus Christ. If you are a Christ worshiper, in your heart you're saying, Greg, this resonates with me. And praise God. If you're thinking this is so weird, this is so odd, maybe two things. Maybe just spend some time reading Ecclesiastes and praying, Lord, show me. And if I can be of help to you, please let me know.